Morning, Jared. Please caution Lepa on his 2002 grand final reminiscence. This one still sits rough with many Pies fans, and it could end up the shortest strategy coaching tenure in history. Regards, Darren from Blackman. Very nice, Darren.
Sorry, Darren. Jared made me do it. I'm not talking about it ever again.
All right, let's play with these two grand finalists, shall we? And the twice that they've met this year, you've developed the formula for our final series. So let's go back, shall we, to round 11.
Okay, let's. That was the Etihad game, which is the Western Bulldogs home game. 87-59, 13-9, 8-11. This was Treloar's first game he missed through the injury for the Western Bulldogs. So that was. I think that's, this is the time where they're starting to find their feet a little bit with a few missed midfielders. Dogs had seven of the top eight possession gatherers on the day. So, you know, they had plenty of the ball. They had 54 more disposals. So that wasn't an issue on the day. But Melbourne had four of the top five interceptors with Jake Lever sort of leading the way with 13. So he was huge. He's actually huge in both games, to be honest. We can touch on that in a minute. The Dogs actually had six more inside 50s on the night that Melbourne won, but their forward efficiency, and it was an issue in both games. It was a factor. It was only at 34%, whereas Melbourne went at 50% going inside 50. So that was a big difference on the night, just being efficient. As we thought, Melbourne won the hit-outs, but the Dogs won the clearances.
Yes.
So that is a bit of a theme in that. And Melbourne won the contested possession. In fact, they won them in both games. But the big difference here, Jared, is that the post-clearance contested possession, so they won that by 21. So that's, if you think of a stoppage and the ball goes outside the stoppage, it's that ball. So it's almost a forward via back, or it's a wing via wing. It's not sort of that midfield via midfield sort of scrimmage and fight and scrap. That part was relatively even. It was everything on the outside of that. So and that night Melbourne kicked 7 goals, 2 from front half turnovers, which was the big scoring source in the game, which means they got all their numbers, they choked the Western Bulldogs, and they scored a big amount from the front half of their game. So that was pretty much how that one played out.
Round 19, when they met at the wet MCG.
It was a wet MCG day. Doggies more accurate that night, 13-7, 85. Melbourne 9-11, 65. So you're right, that was the wet night at the G. So Melbourne had 20 scoring shots that particular night, and so did the Dogs. So it's interesting when you have two teams with the same amount of scoring shots. You're trying to look at, okay, did we get the same amount of opportunities? What was it that made it the difference? Because the first game, the Dogs, as we mentioned, kicked 8-11. So they were inaccurate. They had 19 shots, and then Melbourne had 21. So, in fact, both teams had a similar amount of scoring shots in both games when they've played. Again, the Dogs had seven of the top 10 possession gatherers, so that they'll get the ball, and which means nothing's going to change there. In both games, McRae and Oliver, the 1 and 2 disposal players on the ground, and then the rest was all Western Bulldogs players. The second game was a bit different, where the disposals were actually similar. So the Dogs actually had, you know, less of the ball than the previous game and won. So that was a real difference in the two. But the inside 50 efficiency, there wasn't a lot of difference. The Dogs still went at 39%. So in both games, they've struggled to be highly efficient inside their forward 50 against Melbourne. Massive stat, this one. The actual Dogs won the free kicks that night 25-11.
Yep.
And then that wet night. So that can play a huge part, particularly in wet games. You know, that's a contested possession, every one of those free kicks. So you've got to, you know, tidy that part of the game up. And again, Melbourne won the contest possession plus 23. Again, plus 20 on the post, on the outside of the clearance. They won the contested possession. So that will be the differential, I think, in the game. Again, the hit-outs dominated by Melbourne, 67-18. This is without Steph Martin there. So this is going to be a massive difference, or the big difference in the two games coming this week. Melbourne kicked 4 goals, 5 from front half turnover. I said last time they kicked 7 goals, 2 in the other game.
Yep.
They kicked 4 goals, 5. So both nine shots both,
yeah,
times. So expect that to probably happen again. It's just how accurate you are often from a certain part of your game. And then and Josh Shackey played his first game back, but he played defence. That was his first game he played defence, and he played on Jackson. They tried him there in that,
yep,
particular role in round 19. So that was the wet game over there. So in overall, if you put the consistent themes together, the things that poked out in both games, so 39 shots to 41. So expect an 11-goal-10 to 10-goal-10 sort of game.
Yep.
You know,
that
should be, if you're going on a bit of history, it should be a 20-shot-each sort of game. Whichever way that, expect McRae and Oliver to get as much ball as they want, because in both games,
yes,
they just were left alone to just amass it. So unless someone does something completely different, that will happen again. The Dogs inside 50 both games were poor, as in the 30s. So that might continue to be an issue and not be something that Luke Beveridge needs to look at if it goes back in the same way. And looking at the contested possession count, you'd think Melbourne are going to win it on the outside again, plus 15 or more with that, given the fact that that's been the consistent theme of what's happened through the last couple of times they've played. The big difference, though, is the Steph Martin factor, which can change a lot of these numbers, because he's definitely might change the hit-out number, but it also might change a few other things and the confidence of what the mids have inside, because it definitely changed what we expected last week with Steph Martin being there.
And Melbourne will have shots from their front half turnovers.
Yes, they'll get 9 or 10 shots from their front half because they're good. That's their defensive DNA. They'll try and everyone wants to score on the first turn, so don't worry about that. They'll hopefully score on the first turn, but they're good at scoring on the second turn if they don't quite get it done. If Western Bulldogs win it back, they're good at pinning them in and making they get another shot. So I think the Dogs' advantage, though, is Steph's back. I think that's it. And we just spoke about that briefly. He'll help those contested ball numbers. And the Dogs will make Melbourne defend them really hard. So they're that high handball game. So Melbourne will have to be at their defensive best in close. Their tackle, their hit-in pressure has to be as good as it's going to be, because Western Bulldogs will try and weave their way through you and trying to get a really clean inside 50 look with a bont running through with open space. They don't like to kick over hands inside 50. They like to be in open grass coming inside 50. So to do that, you have to, at the source, challenge the midfielders with handball in an inventive way. So they'll definitely do that and make sure Melbourne's defending really well, which they didn't do on the first night, because The second game, one thing I failed to mention, which this is going to fail to go into Melbourne's advantage, in the round 19 game, the Dogs actually kicked 6 goals 1 from forward 50 stoppages. That is a crazy number. Yep. So 6 goals 1 out of their 13-7 from stoppages in your forward 50. That's just an insane number. You might get a goal a game out of something like that. So that's, if you're a Melbourne supporter, you think, well, just a bit of concentration and a bit of that, a bit of concentration around the stoppage, we can fix that sort of number. It was a really lethargic performance by Melbourne in watching it back when I watched it the other night. And the other thing, Melbourne advantage, is their defence and their interceptors. So that's where you might see some of the magnets come into play to stop Melbourne's interceptors and their defensive players. The one thing I'm not sure about from both teams is health. Who is in the best possible space? It's so much debate, because if you had a ledger between, we've spoken about the fine line between rest and rust. Now, rust comes in many forms. Now, rust, you could be rusty because you're not quite, haven't had enough match play to get to, the pinnacle of where you want to be. But then again, you might have had too much rest and you've come back down to rust, and that is the challenge that we're unsure of, because 2 weeks ago, we're sitting here saying Melbourne are the most primed. And then after, now that the Bulldogs have gone through their all the things that can promote rust, a bit of travel, yep, bit of fatigue, and also players coming back from injury. And now Treloar's had enough games back, Dunkley has, Steph Martin's got a run in him, and they've got an extra 2 weeks to rest that team with no travel. They come to the starting blocks as equal. If not, you go maybe a little bit more match hardened. Yep. So that part has just almost swung on its head. So that has changed that whole thought process for me from 2 weeks ago.
And the spirit and psychology around the Dogs, yeah, is that a factor?
That's the one. I mean, Luke Beveridge has played on that the whole time. But mind you, I think Melbourne have got their own spirit game going, yeah, as well. And that would be the difference between the two. Goody's got his, almost the feel like we are the team destined to win this. He's almost convinced these players that this is our destiny. Whereas Bevo's spirit and psychology is more based around us versus them mentality, and we've done this before and we're the underdogs and we can do it from the back half of the four. So his, yep, is more come from that angle, but both have something like that at play.
So when you tie all of that together, have you landed somewhere?
I've landed to Melbourne in overtime.
Oh, beautiful.
Well, they're all going to have 20 shots. See something? This is the greatest chance of a grand final going to a draw, unless something, catastrophic happens and one team just really gives up the ghost and has a terrible day, or one team is, or the other option is accuracy. As we know, one team's extremely accurate, one team is extremely not, which can happen as well.
Oh, it'll be a good broadcast to be part of if it's overtime, won't it?
I think I'm just praying for that part of it.
So, the whiteboard, the magnets. What would you like to do with the grand final magnets, Leper? Where do you want to draw our attention?
Oh, let's go to a few of the matchups that we think might happen on the day. I think this one's a good chance, which is Josh Shackey to go to Jake Lever, which he did really well at Lear. Lear still had a bit of an influence last week, but Josh also, I think, played some of his better footy and just marking the ball, and it was a good starting point for him. The one difference, and if you want to give Josh any advice, is go watch some of Jacob Townsend's vision from 2017 that he did, the same job on him in the grand final. That was and Jacob was one who obviously would have come from a different bent. He wouldn't have been just, you know, playing from the back shoulder and all about technique. He literally physically, you know, got in to him as well, to Jake. So that would be a good starting point. It sort of defies his personality a little bit, doesn't it, to do that.
So what does that look like in a game?
What it is often playing behind, being physical, keeping hand contact, so that's the important stuff. Keeping the player off balance as much as you can. It doesn't mean doing anything reckless or, you know, outside the rules, but it's just making sure he can't get a free run at the ball, which is what he likes. We just spoke about the two games he's played, 13 intercepts and 15 intercepts. That is a big problem for the Western Bulldogs and will be a problem this week if they continue that going.
Yep. So go study Townsend on Lever.
Yeah.
The history is a good guide.
Alex Keith will be back in the team, you'd imagine, for Ben Brown. It's a shame. I'm not sure. Maybe it's Cordy that exits. But, that'll be the other interesting matchup for me. Because Ben Brown's going to have to. One thing he's done really well is just a few times he did this last week is go up with one hand and bring the ball to ground. And I've loved that evolution of his game, and people might think that's a little strange, but we saw Ben Brown in the past when he was at North Melbourne. If he didn't mark it, he'd get fed under the ball and get marked against. So that's the all duck, no dinner approach. I think one thing he's grown into his game is to make sure Keith can't mark the ball. So make sure at least the ones he can't win, he's got to know that, if I'm getting under the football here, I've got a decision. I can go for broke or I can plant my feet and drop back and get one arm up and make sure Keith can't mark it, which will bring in now Cozzy Pickett and all those sorts of players to come into play. So that I think that's been the maturity of Ben Brown, and I'm looking forward to see him continue that part of it, making good decisions on knowing when to mark the ball, but more importantly, when to get another opportunity, when to bring it to ground and go, if it's at the ground, we've got Cozzy Pickett, and if Cozzy doesn't get it, if they pick it up, Cozzy will probably tackle them. So it'll give us another opportunity. So there's no loss in bringing it to ground. I think it's something Charlie Dixon's done really well at Port, but it's a really common thread now in key forwards in the game.
Yep.
I think Waitman will come back in. And unfortunately, it's probably Scott and JJ back as the sub. That's the most likely. But he's going to be a really important player, I think, because I think one thing that we saw a few times, Rivers a few times in the final last week, held a few times. He was the one that looked a little shaky. So I think Waitman's influence down there could give him that little sting as well. It's going to be very difficult for their keys to take a lot of marks, given the talent of Lever and May. So the ground is going to be more weight on the ground level.
Yep.
And I thought all of the ground level Dogs players were amazing last week. Even Rourke Smith playing a role in that as well. Even just their role players, I thought, did a really good job. But Johannesson played that role as well last week. So they've got some really good role players in that role. But he's the one that can potentially, with Bailey Smith, who's that half forward that goes up to the midfield that comes back to goal. So that's how he gets his goals, because he makes you think he's a midfielder, but then really he comes back and he's all on his own. So that's going to be a real important part of it. And the last part for me, and it's not a magnet so much from an individual. Well, it is an individual matchup, it's Max Gawn, but it's how you deal with the Max Gawn threat. There's a theory that went around a year or two ago that Port Adelaide did, where they just got lots of hits on him. They were pretty aggressive that day in doing that, but What does hits mean? Hits is just really stopping your run as much as you can. If you've got to constantly restart yourself, you start running, little bump, got to restart again, bump, little start, rerun. Or you're on the ground, someone just a little push down, get back up again. So you have to get up and down off the ground or restart your run. It's just frustrating and tiresome. And over the course of four quarters, that's where those sorts of strategies can wear down a particular player. But it's interesting to see whether they go with something like that. That's not in your face, it's not violent, but it's just restrictive and makes it hard for Max to get his dominance that he wants.
We are trying to stay connected to events across the country. So 10 minutes before he's got to walk onto the bus to go to training this morning, Christian Salem from inside the D's camp. Christian, it's great to have you on SEN.
Thanks for having me, Jared.
So tell me this, does it feel like grand final week? Knowing that you haven't experienced before, but does it feel like it?
Yeah, it does. It's definitely the longer build-up, which is a bit different. But, the buzz over here is pretty crazy, and I can only imagine what it's like in Melbourne.
Does it feel like you've done a bit of waiting around already?
It hasn't been too bad, considering we did this pre-Geelong. We all obviously had the week off, so we're in a sort of similar routine. But, since yesterday, it started to ramp up pretty quickly, being back in the normal schedule.
So what does life look like? What are you able to do outside of the football commitments?
Yeah, well, now we're out of quarantine, we can pretty much do whatever we want. You know, restaurants, cafes are all open over here. So a few boys have been going out for breakfast, jumping in the beach for recovery. So it's, at the same time, it's been pretty cruisy in terms of we've been training and just focusing on recovery and just getting ourselves ready.
Have you, do you feel ready personally? How much are you looking forward to it?
Yeah, I'm pretty excited. Obviously, it's still 4 or 5 days away, but yeah, at the moment, it's yeah, more excited than nervous. It's going to be a great week, and you know, all the boys are looking forward to it.
So there's a lot of red and blue flying back home, Christian, and your brothers seem to be right at the forefront of that. It was at the Point Restaurant, the North Point. How much have you seen of what they've been up to?
Yeah, I have. I've seen a bit going on there. It's been great. Not only them, but the whole community around there back in Melbourne have got around us. And, you know, we've been drip-feeded stuff, whether it's houses being painted, stuff being put up on fences. And, it's, you know, the support's been incredible.
So how far have the brothers gone?
Yeah, they've painted. So obviously got the two restaurants. They've painted them red and blue, and they've put up some photos that some of the boys from the club have sent through. So they've yeah, they've been helped out there.
It's good fun, isn't it? It's a whole family experience, even when they're detached from it.
Absolutely. It's been great. And you know, the buzz around the restaurants have been good too. People have been coming past for photos and whatnot. And, you know, it's just good that they're enjoying the week back home in a pretty tough time.
What's your grand final experience been like through underage competitions and the like? Christian, have you seen one before?
I've had a couple. Club football and then Vic Metro, but yeah, so I've probably, yeah, two or three, I reckon, over my time.
Have you won them?
Yeah, one, yeah, three from three, I think, which is nice. Handy, so hopefully we can keep it rolling.
Do they stick in your memory as excitable days?
Yeah, there was a couple of good games. Club footy was always great, playing with the mates, so it was good to get a couple back there.
Christian, what was Saturday night session like? Was it everything that you wanted from it?
Yeah, it was, absolutely. You know, we, like I said earlier, we had that opportunity to prepare the week leading into Geelong. We did a similar sort of setup, and, you know, it's a bit of a unique situation having a game in a month, but, you know, we embraced it. We went pretty hard. We did a couple quarters and obviously some other kicking drills and whatnot, but, you know, everyone bought in and, you know, went at it in a way where we're not going over the top, but, you know, we've got the working that we needed to get done.
So there was a great debate back here, Christian, around, and it is because of the lull. Is what percentage of intensity would you have gone at?
Yeah, look, to be honest, you know, we had a contest block where that was full on 100%. You know, we do that throughout the season, and, you know, the match team was pretty much fully at it, except, you know, you just got to be smart. Like, you don't want to be slinging people, jumping into people's backs and whatnot, but other than that, you know, we want to practice our game style as best we can and give it as much like intensity as we can.
So obviously, so Charlie Spargo is much reported now as he jarred the ankle during it. Is that, so there is an inherent risk to doing that. Is it a little bit of hold your breath but need to do it?
Yeah, I guess at times, you know, it's like that in any situation when it comes to this sort of stuff. But, you know, that happens throughout the year at training, little knocks and bruises. And, you know, Charlie's fine. It's just, yeah, like you said, more of a jarred ankle. And, you know, I think he's training today, so he'll be sweet.
Yeah, that's good to hear. The strategy side of things, Christian, what sort of meetings are you having during the week leading up? So what is it? It's Tuesday morning. Have you started any of that work with the unusual two-week block?
Yeah, we sort of started on Saturday in terms of, yesterday. I'm losing track of the days already. yesterday we started just with a review and leading into like OPPO reports and whatnot. And we're just trying to make it as normal as possible. You know, there's obviously going to be distractions, but, you know, yesterday we just started to ramp it up.
Do you get right into that strategy side of things? Does that appeal to you?
Yeah, obviously it's, you know, you play a number of teams over the years, and we're lucky to play the Bulldogs twice or three times, including a practice match. So, you know, it's, where boys do a lot of work, but, you know, we know as well as players what needs to be done and sort of how they play and set up. So it's, yeah, it's just the start of a long week in terms of that sort of stuff.
Grand final experience. So Mark Williams brings so much of that as a coach, one of the famous flags. What's he been like? Has he delivered anything unusual yet?
He's think he did a presentation a couple or last week to a few of the younger boys just about his grand final experiences and how he went about it in his journey. So, you know, from what I heard, that was pretty special. But, you know, he's great to have around just to bounce questions off. And obviously he's been through what the week looks like and distractions and all that sort of stuff. So it's been good to, you know, bounce some stuff off him.
Do you want to know much about grand finals or do you just want to walk into it and experience it for the first time for yourself?
Yeah, I'm probably more that side of it, just sort of, you know, walk into it and experience it. And obviously, you know, it's a bit of a different prep in terms of specifically game day. Like it's the schedule changes a little bit with concerts and whatnot before the game. So you just got to be prepared for that as best you can. And other than that, just to try and make it as normal as possible and, you know, not overthink it and just simplify it.
Will you get nervous?
I'm more the excited type than nervous. You know, it's just, you know, it is what it is. It's always going to be nerves. But, yeah, I'm more excited for it and, you know, I'm looking forward to getting into it.
So it's your eighth season, 26 years of age. Does it feel like a long journey within the AFL to get to this moment?
It does. It's long and quick at the same time. It felt like yesterday I debuted, but at the same time, when I got to the club, you know, it was the first year of Roosie, so it was a bit of a rebuild. And, you know, it's been a long journey in terms of that. You know, a lot of ups and downs. And, you know, to be where we are now, couldn't be prouder of the club and the boys.
Yeah, so that's a beautiful 8 years to live, isn't it? If that is the point that this gets measured back to, is you're there at ground zero.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something I'm proud of and I wouldn't change a thing. You know, it's been tough journey, not only for the club, but the fans too. And, you know, previously to me being there is, you know, some more pain. And you can see that from speaking to Demon supporters. And, you know, now we're just sort of trying to repay the faith and, you know, make them proud. And, you know, obviously there's still one more game left and hopefully we can finish off the job.
They're feeling that's for sure as we sample it every day here. So just as we conclude, when do you get told, when's your oppo session? When do you get told who you'll be responsible for from the Dogs?
Yeah, sort of more later in the week when we go through structure stuff. Yesterday it was more about types of when they want to play. So probably Wednesday, Thursday, we'll ramp it up quite a bit and you know, lead into the game.
Do you have a fair idea, having played against them twice this year?
Yeah, I think so. All the boys have a fair idea. It's,
yep.
It is what it is, and yeah, you just got to get your head around it.
Christian, good luck with the preparations. You're due on the bus. Don't be late. Go well over the next few days, and we'll see you in action on Saturday night.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Good on you. Christian Salem there from the Demons. So the build-up on the other side of the country as the Ds head to training on a Tuesday. So it's all maintenance from here and the preparations for the big one.
Making stupid, pedantic rulings and be influenced by social media in trying to shape your game, then you're going to end up with this. And the top coaches and the top players and the top referees will make a mockery of you the closer you get to the big games. And there were a number of instances on the weekend where players made a mockery of the rules. Everyone thinks I'm a whinger and everyone thinks I'm complaining for the sake of it. I don't. I'm trying to help the bloody game. How often this year have we seen trainers running on and stopping the game? It's been a blessing because the score's been 50-0 a lot of the times and we wanted the game to stop. We were sick of watching it, all right? But we've allowed it to go on to the point at a crucial game in a final, our most important game last year, Pete Green runs on the field. Ooh, stop, stop, stop. Oh, I can't, he's got to stop. Why? Well, you're not going to bend in his shoe or something. I don't know.
Phil Gould howls at the moon. It's a special category. It was worthy of repetition today. Channel 9's 100% footy last night after the Panthers and the Eels. A contentious, thrilling finish, scoreless second half. Vossie was calling that. Andrew Voss, welcome.
Yeah, good morning, Jared. Yes, and I should clarify for our listeners, I had the great pleasure and great fun working with Gus Gould for more than a decade at the Channel 9 network. I think if I was to tally up all the arguments I had and disagreements on issues, probably weighed at about 45-55. 45% of the time I agreed with him, 55% of the time we disagreed. Gus loves being challenged. And he loves an argument. He loves a debate. So there's a fair bit of theatre in him too. He's the pantomime actor. You know, the bloke behind the star up the front?
Yep.
And the crowd say, look behind you, look behind you. And when he turns around, Gus is gone. And then he comes back from behind the curtain. That's Phil Gould. That's the character Phil Gould is. He got a role on that. There's a fair bit of truth in what he said, mind you. But let's not try to escape the issue here, Jared. And it's the same in the AFL. Coaches are cheats. Coaches bend the rules. That's part of their modus operandi, is to bend the rules. We put rules in place. Who else do you blame here other than the coaches? They exploit things. That's what they do.
So this was a trainer running out onto the ground when an injury, your call of it was quite brilliant. He must have imagined the injury from a long way away and got straight out on the ground to get the pause that the Panthers desperately needed.
Yeah, he didn't actually get on the field, so he's diagnosed from a distance. Now, I won't exaggerate. The player was the grandstand side of the post. So I suppose if I was to put out a line, he's a good... He's 20 metres away. A rugby league field is 66 metres wide, so he's at least 20 metres away. The player was not writhing in agony. It was at a key point in the game. Parramatta on the attack, you know, peppering the Panthers' line, and the Panthers trainer runs up to the trainer and just says, stop the game, look. And they did. And momentum lost. I mean, who's at fault here? No, Penrith are at fault here. It's not the rules. It's exploitation of it. And this trainer, this particular trainer, had actually been served a breach notice earlier in the year. So he has a little bit of form in that department. It's a tactical move. They're not the only club to do it. It happens. Yes, we've created rules that enables it to happen. But when it actually is executed, it has to be blamed on the team and the coach, does it not? Not the rule itself, I would think.
Ah, there are such commonalities across codes all the time, Vossie, and this is absolutely one of them. Now, yesterday, back page of the Daily Telegraph, Cam Munster, I know everyone is death riding us to lose this week. Hello, Sydney.
Oh, look, I don't know. Look, that's just, it makes a great headline, of course, and of course you're going to put it in black and white, bold print. Cam, I don't think that's 100% correct. It's an interesting one because if you were to just isolate and say that's a Sydney versus, you know, Victorian club that perhaps, you know, Sydney is throwing its support behind the Sydney club, I don't know whether Penrith are exactly the flavour of, a month, if you like. You know what I mean? That they were last year. They were a better feel-good story last year. This year, there have been times where people have criticised them because they've said they're arrogant. And, you know, some of their celebrations and what have you, some of their players get up in the face and, you know, rub the head of the player after they've, the defender after they've scored a try. And that doesn't go down well with a lot of fans. So there's not as much love for Penrith this year. So I don't know whether people are automatically jumping on the Sydney club because they are playing Melbourne. I think the true rugby league fan, maybe I'm taking a little bit too much license here, Jared, but you do appreciate what Melbourne, how they play and the stars they have. And watching Brandon Smith play is fantastic. And Ryan Pappenhausen and Cameron Smith and Justin Ollam and Addo Carr, it goes on. I think there is an appreciation for the skill, but maybe it's just ingrained in us that we don't have to like Victorians, you Mexicans, you bastards.
Now, the other element I really like is that the Panthers have put forward a proposal for a gentleman's agreement with the Storm that we won't milk penalties in the preliminary final. How convenient, Vossie. How convenient.
Please, as if that's going to happen. Come on. Look, when we're talking the Messiah, Cameron Smith said earlier this year, we went down this path at State of Origin, that, you know, players won't stay down for a penalty. Cameron Smith, now, games record holder, arguably greatest player of all time, said, what, you're telling me at 12 all, 2 minutes to go, you're not going to stay down? If you feel a little touch around ahead, of course you're going to stay down. So there's no gentleman's agreement. Gentleman's agreement is a cliche. It's crap. Doesn't work in real life. In the heat of battle, when things are on the line, it's going to happen. And we had a case the other day where Blake, if you touch your neck, we call it the crusher tackle, you hold your neck, the referee blows the whistle, blows a penalty. The moment he heard the whistle, he jumped straight up and went to fight the player who'd tackled him.
Yes.
Like, there was no injury. It's a blatant act of acting, and it's not in the spirit of the game. But again, do you blame the rule or do you blame the player? No, the player is the one who did that. I mean, you know, we should be charging him.
Bossy, good form this morning. Well done across our great divide.
Melbourne to win. I just said it quietly.
Don't tell anyone out loud on 1170. Andrew Voss, who hosts The Breakfast Show in Sydney on SEN. We reach across the divide on Tuesdays.